Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Show Radio. It's episode 492 of The Show. I'm your host, Andrew.
Hi, I'm Danny.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. Head over to theshowradio.info. Once again, that's theshowradio.info. And check out our past shows. While you're there, subscribe and tell a friend about the show. The show is on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the places you can find podcasts, you can find us. And thank you for hanging out with us tonight. So tonight, I think it's safe to say, maybe it's safe to say that this is relatively going to be a shorter broadcast than the previous episodes that we've done the last couple of weeks. We're going to get right to it. So Daniela, how are you?
Busy, dreading going to work tonight, but you know, good. Nothing crazy.
Okay. And I know pretty much right after this, we're going to jet out into a couple of IRL things and stuff like that. So the main thing that I wanted to discuss, aside from a couple of random things, maybe, is Google Stadia, right? So that was announced this week. I wanted to talk about it so bad, but due to scheduling and stuff like that, I'm like, we're just going to wait till Sunday. So Google announced its internet streaming platform, which promises a lot of things. And there's a lot of excitement, and there's some individuals who are currently reserving their excitement based on what was announced by Google. So I know you had an opportunity to check that out, if I remember correctly, right?
Somewhat. I mean, I had the option to. I wasn't able to. So that's a huge thing. So they're going to be offering this whole game and play anywhere from laptop, desktop, some phones.
Right.
See, I got into it. So it was, I think they had a four month pyramid period of last year where they called it Project Stream. So if you got into it, it's tied to your Google account, obviously. You log in onto your browser and then you just access whatever game it was. And at that time they gave Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So it was like free access to that up until, I think a week or so into January. I wasn't able to play at all because some of the requirements, I don't remember exactly because we don't have access to it anymore, but I know that you need to have a stable connection. So they would do a speed test, not like your typical normal speed test. It was through one of their servers, and I don't remember it ever having or specifically saying where that server was, but they would do a test and I always passed it. And it was like a basic minimum requirement, I think, as long as I had, I think it was a 5 megabit, 10 down, I think it was 5 up or something like that they would check. That was fine. Having a good enough browser and to make sure it was up to date, that was fine. My problem was the ping. The ping was a huge thing. And being from Hawaii, that's almost impossible to have nearly as good of ping as anybody else, simply because of our distance. I think the requirement was a ping of 40 or less. I was consistently between 45 and 60, which to me, that is actually kind of amazing because like games like Fortnite, I'm lucky if my ping's like 90. So the fact that I was getting the that type of latency, I thought was amazing. It wasn't amazing for them. I could not access that. I tried posting in the forums, asking questions, no answer. It was just like, if you don't pass that, well, then you're not going to get it. Which leads me to question. I mean, I feel like unless there's going to be some overhaul and upgrades to their infrastructure or even the entire internet infrastructure, I don't know how reliable that will be for like a lot of people.
Right.
So when they fully announce or release it, not announce, but release it and it's available to the public and everybody can go and try and play and do all these things. I don't know. I hope maybe they increase that limitation there.
Right.
So I was like, I kind of bummed out about it.
Yeah. So it's going to come down to the internet consistency for the person. They talked about the nodes, how many nodes they have. They talk about the relationships that they have with companies, but they don't have relationships with every single internet company across the states or, you know, depending on where they're going to have the service, right? So there is those questions that people are concerned about. So if your internet is okay now and you're not necessarily going to consider upgrading your internet for that particular service, if you're able to, you know, update your internet, then it's still going to be the same thing. Reliability with the consistency of your internet service is going to be a major issue. And that's really where we are with it, right? But in terms of technology, like the controller, what did you think about the controller, the build, and what you saw from the presentation?
I didn't like the controller.
Okay.
It looks so blah.
Okay.
I was not impressed by it, the look, the build, or anything. Honestly, it reminded me of, you know the kid gaming brand Leapfrog?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that.
Okay. So what would be the, this is one of the dopest controllers out kind of setup that would make you get excited about the controller? Is it the button layout? What got you like, yeah, it's not really all that?
Kind of is the button layout. It's just the look and the feel. It looked really cheaply made. That's kind of what I feel looking at their controller. I love the PlayStation controller. I love the way that it's designed. I love the way that it feels in my hand. And right now, like, the only controller that I'm even remotely interested in touching or having, really, is Astro's, C40 that's coming out. Yeah. Just because with that one, and I think this is a lot of things, because SCUF is like this too, where you can customize it and you can change it and, you know, you can make it your controller. Like, I like having that versatility. So that's kind of what I look for in any controller.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
I don't know. I wasn't really impressed. I don't think I'm going to. It's got to be a really nice, sweet bundle, I guess, if I'm going to have it. But as long as I can use and plug in, you know, the already existing controllers I have, whether it be the Xbox One or my PlayStation One or the SCUF One or whatever it is, there's no real reason or purpose for me to own it. It's kind of like the Steam controller when that came out. I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. That looks a little bit janky. That they tried something new. They tried something different, which is nice. They really tried to go outside of the box with that. But I wasn't compelled to, like, I need to add that to my arsenal.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So aside from the controller stuff, aside from the internet, potential capabilities, you know, lack of, aside from the ISP conversations, what else stuck out for you for the actual Google Stadia?
Aside from thinking about how the connection is going to be, I think it's a really cool concept to have access into whatever may be Google's cloud to access your games literally everywhere. I think that's one of the coolest things that I took away from Project Stream, was the fact that it was a web page. You bookmarked it, there's your game, and wherever you log in for another computer to play it, as long as it meets the requirements, continue on. I thought that was a really cool concept. I think that's going to be amazing for those who are playing like a lot of single player games, which I'm kind of thinking that's why they chose Assassin's Creed Odyssey, other than that's the reason that was like the latest game that was out there. But I am very curious when it comes to like multiplayer games.
Okay.
What that experience is going to be like. But definitely that feature, I think, is really, really cool to me.
Yeah. I think in the video, when I was watching it, they showed the instances of potential multiplayer and how Battle Royale concept may happen on it because of the different amount of instances that you can have at the same time. And that's pretty exciting. But all that leads back to the internet connection, right? So there is that. So I think that it was refreshing for me to see, because I don't think I've ever really went after any kind of product that was cloud-based platform streaming service kind of thing. I know we stream like movies and stuff like that, but that's definitely totally different from this kind of stuff in terms of the intensity that is going to take. But I'm sure Netflix has a whole bunch of servers, server farms, if you will, as it relates to how people stream and interact with their particular platform. What's up, Rue? What's up, Aaron? Thanks for being here. So I'm excited about the concept that Google is throwing so much money behind that, right? So the other conversation that I'm kind of seeing happening, but not so much, is what is this thing going to cost, right? Are we having that conversation? I don't think it's too early to have that conversation. What is it going to cost us to have Google as our PC, right? So essentially, that's really what's happening. We have the screens. We may have multiple screens, or Chromecast, or whatever you want to call it. We have our phones, right? What is it going to cost us, whether it's a subscription, you know, model or that kind of a thing, for this power that we're going to be getting from Google? And I was really excited to see that it was powered by Linux, right? Versus any other platform, because I've always been one of the individuals who's so happy that, you know, Linux works the way it works and makes it easier for us to do stuff and it's pretty stable. So the fact that it is being powered by Linux is a great thing as well. So any thoughts around those things?
Oh, it's going to have to be 100% subscription based, whatever that pricing model may be. I don't have a feeling that it'll be like a tier based thing. But it can't be like a free game launcher, kind of like you have your Epic launcher, you have your Steam launcher. Like, they have to be able to maintain their infrastructure and all the work and servers and connections and the hosting in this cloud. I take it back. It could be tier-based. Like, you'll have that standard, like, oh, for 1 year, be $99 or whatever. But I think what would also add on to that package is how much cloud space that you buy for your games, for your save games, for whatever it is that you put onto there. I think that's where it will definitely come into making a bigger package.
Okay. Okay. And the price of the controller, are we throwing prices out there? I'm thinking $119.99 for the controller.
I would probably agree with you on that price point. Okay. It's not a very attractive thing. Like I said, like, I want them to be able to bundle it. I wouldn't be surprised if with their controller, they bundled like, oh, buy this controller, have one year free, right, or like, here, 6 months free with, you know, 20 gigs of cloud space or something. I don't even think 20 gigs is enough, but I think that's going to have to be bundled like that to make it attractive for people to want to buy into the controllers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm hopeful. And I think I'm somewhat slightly reserved at the same time, because it's something that we don't have a lot of control over, right? So there is that. We know for a fact that if we set up a server at home and we have, you know, permissions and different things to that, we can specify the kind of bandwidth that goes out and in of that particular setup. And now we're having a company that's pretty much saying, hey, we're going to take care of all the power stuff. All you have to do is just, you know, bring the internet connection and bring your screens, and you should be able to go from your phone to your tablet to your TV to your, you know what I mean, that kind of a thing, and in a couple of seconds to resume the game or whatever the case might be. And so I'm a little reserved, but hopeful at the same time. I think it's exciting to see a company such as Google get behind that, and I think that it's new life, you know, breathing on the YouTube platform, right? In terms of how easily it's going to be able to be shared. You're going to be able to share that content from it happening on your screen to the YouTube and stuff like that. So I think I'm excited about those things as well.
So I also feel, since it is going to be Google, and it does say it's going to be available on select phones and tablets, they're obviously going to be choosing their phone brands first. I think that's going to be another push on top of not having just a bundle for their controller, but to also have some type of bundle for their next, the Google Pixel phone, to be able to access that and probably have some benefits. And they'll probably, and I wouldn't be surprised, and it'd be the smart decision, if there's like extra, I guess, features available to Pixel users for using Stadia along with this. I think it would be a very smart thing, because that's coming out now, is to having controllers that are adaptable for phones, is if their controller also is, you can double and attach to their phone to play games.
Right.
They're just going to take over all the things.
Yeah, obviously. It's exciting to see those things. So any final thoughts on Google Stadia? It's exciting times, man.
I'll give it a try, but just their service. I don't really care for any, like, the controllers or their phones. I'll give it a try again. Hopefully whenever it's available. I already signed up again, which I think you're maybe already automatically signed up if you're in the project stream. For when it fully releases and have access.
Okay. Fair enough. So those are our initial thoughts on it. We're taking it easy heading into the Google Stadia conversation. And there's also other conversations surrounding Project xCloud and all the different companies that are going to do their thing. This episode is going to be relatively condensed, and we're going to just do what we have to do and get out of here. In terms of news, I wanted to add a whole bunch of different things, but I really wanted to get directly to the topics that took place this week. Definitely Sekiro, we're going to talk about a little bit. Atari VCS, Persona 5 announced a Royal, and Death Stranding conversation, and Sony's State of Play. That's it, guys. So we're going to hit those topics, and then we're going to get out of here. So next thing I definitely want to touch on is The Division, right? Real quick, The Division 2 is going well. I'm still having a great time with it. I think that where I believe that content was just going to drop off, it seems like there's more stuff on the map now than there was when I started, okay? So I don't know how they're doing that, but they did that thing, and it's really, really going well in terms of that. I'm almost maxed out at level 30, that portion of it. I think I'm at 27 or something like that, and that experience has been nothing but good times for The Division. So that's all I have.
Do you feel there's enough content for you still to
still
keep
a lot
going, or is
yeah.
it too much?
No, there's a lot to do. So the thing is, like, it's easy to get overwhelmed, but if you have a sense of direction, because you can add stuff to your log to just, you know, decide where you want to do and where you want to go. Lately, I've been jumping into other people's games where they have this feature where you answer the call of somebody needing help, whether they're free roaming or they're doing an actual mission. So I've been jumping in those a lot more because depending on what they have done on their map, I can easily get XP for that, a good chunk of XP to get to the next level for whatever I'm doing. So there's plenty to do. There's plenty to do. And I think that we're not even at this. We're just getting started, really. We're really just getting started. So it's still exciting, still plays well. I don't know if they did a patch to, like, there's a part in the game where if, let's say I'm 27 and you're 15 or something like that, right? It will scale to maybe 26 or 27, very close to mine. But when the game first came out, it seems like the scaling was way more difficult for us playing the game. So I know that, you know, you're getting drops around your stuff, I'm getting drops around my stuff, but the intensity of the game seems to have lessened with the scaling. Maybe it's just me in my mind, maybe because I'm comfortable with playing the game a little bit more. But scaling, the big gap of scaling doesn't seem like it's that much of a grind, you know, or struggle bus, if you will, as it was when the game first came out, which was weird to me. But in terms of content, plenty to do. There's plenty to do.
Okay, so this might be an unfair question. How would you compare the launching and this like open couple of weeks for the Division 2 compared to when the Division 1 came out?
I think that my awareness for Division 1 wasn't there as much. I was excited for what I was seeing. Marketing was still, you know, fairly good. But I think that this launch was one of the smoothest that I've seen, right? In terms of everything that they laid out, the marketing, the betas, and even some of the, you know, bugs that they had in the game with the sound bugs and stuff like that. I would say that this has been like really, really amazing, right? And that's what you want. You want launches to be like that, especially for a game that's set up like this, you know, the looter shooter genre, right? You want a lot of testing. You want a lot of people checking it out. You want to add a lot of stress to your servers, as you know, we hear a lot, but not just, you know, in a portion of a particular area. You want a lot of individuals to attack that thing, right? And I think that overall, it's been really great. And based on the way the game is, whether it's the quality of life or you know, how the game is played and all the things that you can do in the game, there is they've nailed it, right? They've nailed it. And I think that, you know, we keep hearing that over and over and over again as it relates to The Division 2, but you can't dismiss the fact that we always, not necessarily dream, but we always want companies to have such a smooth launch, or as smooth can be, right? Which is relative. And then when it happens, then it's like, you know, do we say how great it is as much as, you know, how bad a launch is, right? And I think that we should praise, you know, this marketing team, development team for such a great smooth process, right? And that's still relative, but based on other launches, I think this has been one of the best ones yet, right? For this type of game.
For that type of game. Well, I was more in comparison into the launch of the content.
The launch of the content. Well, see, the thing with the Division 1 is it launched with decent content. Once you finished, then it didn't have a lot of stuff for you to do, which is why the gap, and they had to, you know, go find themselves. But in terms of content, there's nothing like it right now, right? So this is the blueprint for any game that's going to release that's a looter shooter. There's plenty to do. There's layers of stuff to do now than there's ever been in any type of game like this that I've played. So Division 1, you played, you did what you had to do, and then they had to come out with that 1.8 update to pretty much rectify a lot of mistakes. They also did a lot of the state of the game conversations, whether that was on YouTube or Twitch or whatever it was, to basically say, hey, we're working on it. You know, community feedback was great for them to get to a place where we took all the feedback that we got, we made sense of it, and we implemented into the game that we have, which is Division 2. There's layers of stuff to do. Like, I don't see myself, like, bored, okay? And the intensity of how the enemies attack you, there's always, they're always in close proximity for engagement, which is great. And that's what you need, right? You need engagement, not just only between the company and the consumer, but you need engagement in the game where you come back. And what keeps you coming back, right? You have the end game stuff, you have the loot stuff, you have the missions that continually reward you. You have things that they didn't necessarily announce for you to figure out on your own. So all those things have been, it's night and day in terms of content.
Okay. That's good. That's very promising.
Yeah.
I'm still not really convinced to just jump onto it. I don't know. I just kind of been staying away from multiplayer games and co-ops. It's funny because you say that Division would be like your blueprint for like looter shooters. For me, it's still going to be Borderlands. It is. Like, there's, to me right now, I can easily, even though I say that I don't really want to play any multiplayer games, I'll very easily jump right back into Borderlands, like, no problem.
Yeah.
Me, that's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's still a great game. Aaron says, I'm playing The Division 2 on 3 platforms, playing the same stuff over again, not bored yet. There's variety in guns and builds and encounters. The single player market is looking hot now too. Yeah, single player stuff is really dope. So it's fun with friends. It's fun dropping into the answer the call portion of the game to help other individuals and stuff like that. I feel like I'm playing it at my own pace. I wasn't necessarily concerned to get level 30 right away, and I'm still not, right? And I'm just enjoying it. And even to the point where it I want to go back to the Division 1 because that's New York City, and then Division 2 is Washington, D.C. So even there's excitement on both counts to revisit games, you know? So it's fun. It's fun.
That's good.
And speaking of single-player experiences, let's talk Sekiro for a second. Have you seen anything?
You can talk it. I haven't. Well, no, I've seen the trailers. I've seen all of this stuff leading up to it. But I have yet to play it. I did buy it. I got it installed last night.
Right.
But I haven't started yet. I want to finish Arcade Spirits first.
How
and
is that?
I have been avoiding Arcade Spirits.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Okay. I love it. It's a visual novel. It takes place like in an arcade that you're the creator or the player that you were playing, you know, is down in the rut, has terrible luck, and ends up working at an arcade and also a dating simulator. I always choose a waifu. But no, the story is really good. The voice acting is a lot of fun. And the choices that you get to make, even though they seem so small, it really affects how, you know, like, what's going to be happening, how the other characters interact with you. So I've been enjoying it. I think I have like 2 more chapters to do. But I'm trying to make it a non-habit of not finishing games. So I think I have 2 more chapters and then I can start Sekiro. I have been avoiding watching any streams or any spoilers or anything like that.
Okay.
And I'm kind of avoiding any tips that anybody's going to try to give me, only because I'm just going to try to be this purist and try to figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of friends that know that type games like Sekiro, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne, really aren't my type of games, only because I don't like what are those games, those game types called? The Dark Souls. What is that genre called?
I don't know. I don't know what it's called. But
yeah, the ones that torture you.
Yeah. I think you can it's safely to say it's a torture genre. It is.
But like I'm not one for increasing my sodium levels just because I didn't really I tried Dark Souls, Soulsborne. Is that really what it's called?
I don't know.
Roguelike. I didn't really care for it. Like I tried it. I really did. And I mainly tried it because my brother loves Dark Souls. And when he came to visit, I was like, all right, I'll give it a play. I'll give it a try. And I enjoyed playing it with him.
Right.
But when he left, I'm like, yeah, this is terrible. This is, I'm not having fun. I'm getting frustrated. And it's not even like that type of fun frustration where you're like, you feel confident. Yeah, I got this. And it feels good when it's done. Yeah. When I got through a boss, I didn't feel good. I was angrier. I don't know why. I'm like, yeah, I can't do this. We're done.
It's interesting because I don't think I've ever played a game like this maybe in a long time, because I didn't really do Dark Souls. I have Bloodborne, didn't really play it or anything like that. So jumping into a game like Sekiro, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I've heard how intense and stressful games like Dark Souls can be until you realize what the pattern of behavior is for that particular mechanic or boss or whatever, and then you can figure it out. But sometimes it takes a lot. It takes 10, it takes 50 deaths to, you know, so the title of the game, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, it should be like Shadow Dies a lot of times until you actually figure things out, you know, but that's too long of a title to get to this thing. But I think it's a beautiful game. So let's start with things that we should, that should go into the impressions and stuff like that.
Well, Aaron says you did well in Sekiro.
I tried. Okay. So, but thank you. I appreciate that. But the thing is, it's like, it's a beautiful game, a beautiful soundtrack, beautiful world, navigating the stealth portion. So let's just really get into that a little bit. Navigating the stealth portion, the actual action portion of the game is amazing. It's beautiful. You know, learning the different components. When I finally got my sword, I got excited, right? Understanding the mechanic to, you know, aim on one enemy to another and parrying attacks and stuff like that. All that stuff is great. And I think that my frustration with the game has nothing to do with the game per se. My frustration with the game has everything to do with my understanding of how the mechanic works. But that's on me, right? That's on me. In terms of if I spend, you know, 50 times, 100 times dying at a particular boss, that's on me. I can't give the game a negative, you know, whatever, because I can't play it, right? And I think that we have to be fair when it comes to, you know, certain games, especially as it relates to Dark Souls and stuff like that. So I had to really figure out, what is the problem here? Is it a great game? The answer is yes. What is my issue? My issue with the game is I didn't know how to play the game, right? The mechanic of, you know, waiting for the timing of the boss, and if the boss was going to do their super attack versus a standard attack to take. The energy that the boss takes is, you know, absolutely ridiculous. But have I played Dark Souls games or any game that is very similar to that, I would have been prepared for that kind of, you know, I would have been, the orientation process would have been done already, right? But it wasn't. So this was my first orientation into games like what people keep talking about, the Dark Souls and the Bloodborne and stuff like that. I had no idea. But in terms of navigating the game for the world and stuff like that, it is amazingly beautiful. In terms of learning how to fight, I was trash. Like, that, let's just call it what it was, right? I was really, really, really garbage, right? But the process of going through, there was a particular boss that kept diving and grabbing me, and you can't escape, you know, that particular stuff. And I think it took me a lot. I don't even know, 20, 25 times. It took a lot to even get to that point. But once I got, you know when you got it, right? Once you get to the point, be like, I know what you're doing, okay? I know you have a guy at the corner that you may call upon or the game may call upon to come add even more stress to the situation. But once I got the balance between when this boss was going to, it was like an ogre type boss, was going to do a dive or a kick or, you know, those kind of things, then I started using my grappling ability to the tree to escape and reset and then go back into that particular. Once I got that dynamic, it was over. But it's still a frustrating experience getting to the spot where you understand how to, you know, navigate the bosses. Whether I do three slashes and then back away, or do I take advantage of five as soon as the boss is there? Because if I take advantage of five when the boss first gets there, now the boss is going to do the more powerful attacks earlier on. So now I have to gauge, do I want to do five slashes first or just do three and then kind of like get my footing and stuff. And so all that has been, I may post a clip on IG and Twitter. That has been one of the most frustrating things I've ever experienced in a long time, but that doesn't take away from how great the game is and how great it plays. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what I got there.
Threateningly look forward to it. Like it's possibly like one of the few, I guess, Soulsborne games. I don't know what it is, yeah. But I am looking forward to it because it's funny enough. I think it's also an aesthetic thing for me. Like the visuals in Dark Souls, they look nice, but I really wasn't drawn to them. But then you have games like Neo and Sekiro, and I love the art style. I love the direction that they went. And I am so much more interested in jumping into that than I was for Dark Souls.
Yeah. And I've heard Tenchu being mentioned for, I guess, inspirations of the game. I heard Tenchu, you mentioned Neo. I heard that as well. Neo was very difficult. It seems like it was one hit kill if you weren't careful based on the demo that they had a while ago. So I was in and out of that demo. I was like, oh, that's what we're doing here? I'm done. Nope. Going back to Destiny, I think it was around that time. I'm not doing this, but yeah, it's definitely beautiful. Sounds amazing. All of that, you know, well done.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's what I have with that particular stuff. Atari VCS delayed, and specs get a boost. Daniela, I know you're excited about that. So what's going on with that?
Was. Like, okay. So that was supposed to be released last year, and now you're going to say it's going to be the ending of 2019. Mm. Like, I get that's cool that you're going to be, you know, boosting some of the specs there, but I don't know. Like, for me, the hype has kind of died. Am I still interested in it? Yes, but I'm not nearly on that same level of enthusiasm and hype-ness. I don't know what to go with. That I am. I'm like, okay, when you come out, you come out. And usually I'm advocated, like, if you need more time, great.
Right.
I don't know what it is about this where I'm like, oh, I thought when you announced that you were going to be releasing it, like, you were really, really close. Like, I can understand if you need to delay it a month, maybe for production. But a year? A little bit more than a year? Like, okay, I'll just wait because I don't have anything else better to do.
Right. What if you didn't have the Switch, would you feel different?
I didn't have the Switch?
Yeah.
No?
Okay.
Nope. Which I finally hooked that up with all my streaming set up too, my Switch.
Okay.
But,
Oh, so yeah. So when are you doing the Switch streaming stuff? Let me ask that real quick.
You know, when I can finish more games. So, I want to do more because I finally downloaded everything. It took me forever and a day. I finally got Tetris 99.
Okay.
But, I had to actually learn how to set up the audio and everything because it's a little, like, the setup for the Switch is a bit different from the other consoles. So I had to actually order like a ground loop isolator so that I can have audio directed towards my headset. Because like that audio automatically, once you put it into the dock, you have to have it docked to be able to stream it. All the audio goes out to the HDMI. And then if you ever want to have a voice chat on it or do you want to have gameplay sent to my headset, the way that my audio is set up, I actually needed to get a audio splitter. So it was weird. It was okay. Something different. But no, like I'm not deterred from it. Like I want to have the Atari because just for me it's 100% nostalgia factor. I'm also very interested in the tech and what's going to offer. I'm just a little bit disappointed about how long it's taking.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. So there's that. Next thing we have. Okay. So for me, I'm not necessarily, you know, hype for the Atari stuff. I just want to see what they offer first before I get on board. Persona 5, the Royal. Persona 5, I really enjoyed it, surprisingly. I didn't think I was going to like it. So any thoughts on that?
Oh, I haven't even touched my Persona 5 yet, which I'll get to it eventually. But okay, so is the whole entire Persona series kind of like Kingdom Hearts, where like they'll have similar title names and like...
Yeah, they have the dancing game. They have, you know, they have almost all the genres. But in terms
of... they name them almost all the same. Like, yeah. Even the Persona dancing games, they had 3, 4, and 5. I'm like, not to be confused with the original 3, right. 4, and 5. And now you have, like, Persona 5, the Royal... somebody can fact check me, but I'm pretty sure that came out, what, 2017, I think? And now they have Persona 5, the Royal. So is that, like, to me, if somebody attaches the same title, like Persona 5, and then you add, okay... the Royal, I think of DLC, but this is like a whole new game,
right? So it seems. Yeah,
so I'm like, okay, so is this continuing the story? Is this like the original Persona 5 had DLCs? Like, somebody needs to educate me on top of the entire series of Persona, because that's another reason why I haven't dived into it, even though I was told that, like, yeah, you can jump in anywhere, it's perfectly fine, start yeah. wherever you want in the series. There's just so much in this series. There's like, okay, this is why I don't touch Kingdom Hearts.
So we should do a segment thing. Call it something like Making Sense of Persona. And then we'll do a little research briefing on each title. I guess we could start at two and up, and then see if the stories are connected, linked in any way, shape, or form, how the dancing game affects the actual universe and stuff like that. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, we can do that. You can go and learn that and push us through.
Yeah.
And try out all the things. So the most time I spent is in the dancing games, which those are really, really fun. And to my understanding, none of the dancing games deal directly with each other.
Right.
But they're like this limbo portion in between, like you're in a dream in each one of the associated ones that are like Persona 3 with Persona 3. That's kind of this weird dream limbo that you're in for the dancing.
Yeah, it's definitely a chill game. It's definitely a chill game. Like, even remembering playing segments of it, you know, a buddy of mine actually sent it to me, which was awesome, an awesome gift. And I do have Persona 4, I believe, for PlayStation 3, I think. And didn't play it as much. And those, the games that I overlooked on PlayStation 3, it seems like I picked up in PlayStation 4. Yakuza, overlooked in PS3, picked it up in PlayStation 4. Same thing for the Persona games. But they're really good. They're really good. They're quirky in their own way. Weird characters. But outside of that, definitely an enjoyable experience.
All right. I think they're going to have more announcement like later in April for Persona 5 The Royal. So I'd watch the trailer, and you know what? It doesn't help because I don't know the whole history of it. It doesn't help. But that's the thing. Okay, so here's the thing about Persona. That I love the art style. I so do. I like the fonts and the designs that they come with, the titles and the captions that has that, like, what is it? What is those really OG stereotype ransom letters?
Right.
Like that look of it. Oh my God, that's what really gets me.
Yeah, and music is amazing too. Music, like you said, art style is great. Yeah, Persona 5 is really good. And it seems like it's safe to pick up Persona 5, even if you haven't played the other ones, from what I got, the vibes. I guess within the season when the game first came out, meaning Persona 5. But it's really beautiful. Now, quick side note, if I may, as I'm thinking about it, which we kind of mentioned at the top. So I have this SSD, right? And I have this hard drive that's running Windows, right? I don't have any issues right now. I don't have any issues right now. But somewhere in my mind, I think that maybe my OBS will work better with a solid state hard drive versus a regular hard drive. Maybe it's just in my mind, you know, and as I was sharing with you, I don't know where the rendering takes place, if it passes through the hard drive to do its thing. And if it does, maybe load times for OBS would be greater. So I don't know. Somewhere in my mind is I want to do that test. You know, that means I would have to reinstall Windows 10 on the SSD or something like that. So I'm just thinking about it. I don't have to do it because everything is running, you know, great. And I don't know if I shared with you, I did get the Ethernet dongle for this laptop. I did, right? Okay, yeah. So yeah, so just thinking about stuff like that, if I want to do it or not.
It doesn't hurt. I mean, I like solid-state drives. I have two of them, but I can tell you that I don't have OBS slobs or XSplit installed on any of them.
Okay.
Actually, I have them. I have it. I run it off of my secondary drive or my first secondary drive. I have two of those.
Okay. So now you're just giving me, all right, so I'm
thinking. Well, I mean, my computer is also ridiculously built. So I think it can improve things.
Right.
I don't think if you had a setup like mine, you would notice as much of a difference. Most definitely in the loading of everything. But.
Right. So now I'm thinking instead of doing it that way, so I'm glad I'm talking about it out loud. Why don't I just install OBS on the SSD? I was thinking about redoing the whole drive to put the Windows 10 and, you know, of course, all the apps on the SSD. So I'm thinking, why don't I just see if I can install OBS on the SSD and see if there's a difference in terms of how it runs.
Yes,
do you have 64 gigs of RAM? No, I think I have 16 on this machine. It's either 12 or 16, something like that. But so just considering things. Maybe if I move the OBS to the SSD, and then I'll just run tests on it, and then go from there. So anyway, just random things there. All right. So next thing we have this one before the last topic, and then we're out of here. That's how we're flying tonight. Episode 492 is Sony State of Play. So I want you to lead off with that, and then I'll share some thoughts on the back end of
me.
Yeah. You've seen companies make changes in terms of how they're announcing their products and their lineups to the world. You've seen stuff from E3. You know, companies stay, company go. We're probably going to be surprised if I'm able to go this year, which we've been approved. If other companies are going to fill in the space that other companies have left behind, we've seen those things. So yeah. I want you to lead in with that.
Well, they're taking a page out of Xbox Notebook there, and, you know, they're having their own little thing. How often they're going to be doing their state of play? I don't even think they noticed that. I know that their first show is
tomorrow.
Going to be tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific. So I don't know if they're going to do that a monthly thing, bi-weekly, or whatever it may be. But I think it's great to kind of have those updates throughout the year.
Yeah.
Which leads to having it being a little bit difficult, having really huge announcements for whatever it is, special occasions. But I think this, in a way, kind of makes up for them not really having their showcase at E3. Not saying that I would ever want to trade that off, but they got to be announcing something soon because there's been a lot of dead, I think there's been a lot of dead time from the last major Sony announcement, because I really can't think in the last 6 months, really, of any new huge announcements. A lot of stuff that they got rid of, like I believe it was this month, they got rid of the PlayStation Plus free games for the Vita and the PS3, but that's not really a great news. I thought that was terrible news.
It was.
So I'm kind of like going into this, and I probably shouldn't. I'm going into this having some incredibly high expectations about what they're going to be announcing. They did say they're going to have like new games and trailers, which I feel like, okay, well, my first thing that comes to my mind is Death Stranding, which we'll talk about later. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think when it comes to E3, I know they're not going to have a showcase. I think they'll still have a presence on the show floor. So I hope that this will lead into like, hey, we have all of this stuff. Oh, look, you know, we're going to be having Death Stranding, and go and check out. Not this is true, but it would be great if it's true. Go and check out the demo on the showroom floor for Death Stranding, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Okay, fair enough. I think it's very telling how companies such as, you know, Sony, how they're announcing things now is very interesting. Like, we've seen that on the podcast for the PlayStation broadcast, if you will, how Sean Layden will come on once in a while and make announcements there, what to expect and stuff. And then you have the blogs, the podcasters, the content creators will take that snippet of whatever it is, the audio, and then share that information to the world. And that saves the company so much money, right? Rather than going on the show floor like your E3s and stuff like that and spends thousands of dollars just to be there, right? So you have that. So I'm sure it takes money to create the broadcast that they're getting ready to present. Not sure how they're presenting it and what format, if it's going to be from an office like a Nintendo Direct or something else, right? But it's still way less money to do that and keep the company's products and on top of mind, if you will, as they make adjustments and preparations for other things that they're going to release in the near future, right? So I think it's great. And I think that, and I guess the spin that I want to throw with that is we as content creators should be encouraged and empowered that the platforms that we use for distribution of our content, are we taking advantage of that as much as companies are taking advantage of it, right? So if you see a company like Sony leave the show floor or a stage as big as E3 to now do their either YouTube announcement or YouTube live stream and stuff like that, should you be empowered to do the same, right? Via the Instagrams or the other platforms and the podcasts. And we see a lot of major companies or entities do that. And we have access to the same platforms that they do. So if they're taking advantage of those distribution platforms or channels, we should consider doing the same thing for us. So I was thinking about it along those lines. But the fact that they're making that announcement, once they announce that, it's available immediately everywhere, right? There's no wait times for it. Okay, we've seen Square Enix do it in the past where they will do like a live stream of some sort or whatever. They, you know, whether it's state of the game for the Division 2, once it's up on Twitch, it's there, right? Unless they take the video down, or once they export it to YouTube, it's there. So the information access for those, let's say, high production, you know, video stuff or announcement or live stream stuff is available right away. We don't have to wait for reporters to do it. We have access to that information, which was great. Even when Sony did the going to the movie theaters for the announcement that they were going, or portions of the announcement that they were going to announce at E3, they did the stuff at the movie theaters, right? Which was great for the community, for the individuals who could not necessarily make it. But now you don't even need to go anywhere, right? Tomorrow, as you said, 2 p.m. That's Pacific time, right? So that would be 5 p.m. my time. I know I can grab popcorn, you know, run my errands around that, and then go from there and have all the information that I need to be excited for whether it's the next show and what we're going to talk about, what Sony announced for that particular broadcast. So I think it's not, we've always been at an interesting time as it relates to the distribution platforms, whether it's the YouTube, Instagrams, the Facebooks and stuff like that, the podcasts and stuff like that. But I think that taking advantage of how powerful those platforms are, and whether you're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, you know, Apple Podcasts and all those different things. And I think that this is prime distribution, how it's going to be done with a lot of companies. We saw with Google Stadia. I mean, obviously, right? Where else are we going to see that? We see an audience and a thing, and they're announcing it to the individuals that showed up at the event. But we had access to that information. We didn't have hands-on, I understand, but we had access to the information just as real-time as they were giving it. So that's how I'm looking at that stuff. So if the company decides to save money on a show floor for a particular event or convention and stuff like that, I think that is great. If they didn't have anything to show and they knew that and they were like, okay, so we don't really have anything to show, but we have a couple of things that we want to talk about and let's just do the live stream instead, I think that's great. But however you cut it, whether they had a big thing to show for PlayStation 5 or the next generation of you know, Sony Entertainment, and they decided to just do it this way versus I would say conventional way, right? I don't think it's bad for them. So no, I'm not
expecting, because this is more centered on them.
Right, exactly. And
they don't have to compete for the attention. They don't have to compete for the time. Right. It is just focused on them. And I think Sony obviously has the money to be able to do this and put this on for them. And it's, I'm sure it's not nearly as much as it would be if they went to E3 and renting out all of that and having all the staffing and the setup, because this is more, it's more private. It's more personal, and it's just focused on them. It's better marketing wise and money wise. I mean, it's not even just like companies like Sony that's done it, because you had NRS that had their own thing for Mortal Kombat. They had their whole own showcase, reveal, event, huge thing just for Mortal Kombat. And right. And that's probably not ideal for all studios and for all video games, but you see it happening more often than not.
Right.
That they just want it to be about them and what they're doing and what they're going to offer.
Right. And that's just the way it is. You know, do you want it for yourself? YouTube is not going anywhere. Last time I checked, right? It's not going anywhere. So you have YouTube people, you know, careers and stars have been broken on YouTube, right? You have IGTV, which people are still trying to figure out if they feel good about it or not good about it, which is 10 minutes plus, you know, aside from Instagram being 60 seconds or whatever. Twitter is 2 minutes and 42 seconds, something like that. YouTube is a couple of hours, right? Depending on what you want to do there. Twitch is, well, we know what that is, right? 3+, 1 hour, 30 minutes, whatever, right? So we have these options and exporting options to the platforms that's going to archive that content. So that's where we are, man.
There's a lot. And you know what? This is probably a personal thing. So you know how every E3, everybody grades everybody?
Right.
Like, you know, Xbox took it from me this year, I give them an A, or Sony's representation with a C. You know how you get away from that? You have your own thing. You're like, you know what? Nobody's grading me.
Right.
But I have my own stuff.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't know if I'm going to catch it live, depending on how it bleeds into my schedule for the evening for tomorrow, as far as streaming is concerned. So I'm trying to get, as I mentioned to you earlier, I got some calls to make. Post podcast that I'm going to do and try to avoid the times for tomorrow and get that out of the way. We're going to see what they show, and I'm going to take notes, and then we'll have that information ready for episode 493. So that should be exciting stuff. So yeah, so that's Sony's state of play. Last but not least, the Death Stranding development status. Daniela, I know you're excited for this. I hope you're still excited for this. So what's your thoughts on this right now?
I am. I very much am. Unlike the Atari, they're actually ahead of schedule. Or at least, you know, okay, I don't know what exactly their timeline is. But for them, for Hideo to be so confident, like, oh, we're moving along, you know, a little bit faster than expected. We're past this phase and it's really good. I'm like, well, that's awesome. That's very, very promising. And I kind of, like, I'm at a point where Hideo-san has built up enough of a reputation where you can trust him. You can trust what this man is saying, and you can trust the quality of his work and, you know, his expectations. So I feel like, may this never bite me when it comes back, but I feel like there's almost no wrong that he can do with this game, only because he has such a long-standing, you know, history with just gamers in general. I'm excited. If you're ahead, great.
Nice.
So, I wish I could say that for something like Cyberpunk. I mean, I have a lot of high expectations from them, but right. I don't play a whole lot of games from CD Projekt Red, and that was announced for it, possibly for a release for later this year.
Mm.
I don't know if we can expect that from from Death Stranding. I would love it if I can end 2019 playing Death Stranding.
Right.
Oh, that game. I know it's ridiculous for me to say, but I haven't even played it. I haven't really gotten to see anything other than what everybody in the world has seen. But that's probably my game of the year.
Right.
Whatever already. Year it may come out for me, whatever year that may be, whether it be 2019, 2020, 2022.
Right.
Probably going to be my game of the year.
Yeah. And based on what we saw already from them, absolutely beautiful stuff. I need to figure out what's coming out in April. Like, I haven't done a list of what's coming out for, you know, PlayStation 4 or Xbox in April. And I am considering streaming some Halo stuff soon. So it's been a while. You know, I kind of turned on Halo Reach for Xbox 360 the other day, and I got really, really excited because the menu music still kicks, man. I don't know what it is about Halo soundtracks, man. They're just really, really dope. So I may do that soon. I don't know, you know, how much of it, but I just want to see if I can capture some footage of that for Halo Reach, which is actually right here. I got the limited edition that came with the book and all that stuff, but this is like the game is like actually right here. So it's out. It's in the wild. You know, so I'm just considering, you know, when I want to do that. So I'm debating. But that's it. That's it. So we got Death Stranding. We talked about that. Sony State of Play talked about that. Persona, Atari, Sekiro, The Division, and Google Stadia. And that really makes up episode 492. And that's all I got. We stream on a regular basis. We both do. This is the podcast channel. This is the Show Radio Live. Daniela, you're at Miss DJM for Twitch, right?
Yep, Twitch, and Twitter, Instagram. You can find me, Miss DJM.
Yeah, and I'm at Uriya, U-R-I-Y-Y-A, on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. So definitely check us out there. I think we're always ready to answer any questions and stuff like that when we're live on those Twitch channels. And that's all I have, Daniela. Close us out.
Oh, yeah, this part I always get, like, I always feel so caught off guard for. I don't know why. Thank you for joining us for episode 492. Like you said, you can find us everywhere if you missed us live. But thank you guys for tuning in, checking us out. And until next Sunday, you guys have a good one. Bye.